Good morning. So informal. That's let me first introduce you the two gentlemen, that Chen Xi and Yu Wu, who as they call.
Can you write the names?
Yes.
Of,
yes.
No other new people.
And Yu Wu.
So his first name is Chen
Wu. Is
Yu.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's my two.
Did you write down the Chinese convention or American convention?
Well, this is the American way. This is last name. Okay, this is last name. And also someone also on board. Our mentor, Fazli. Fazli was on board. And okay, all right. So. Okay, what the goal is to try to predict the average quantities of turbulent flows. So I share actually the view of Nigel is on. So we'll do statistical theory and I think there are people who study a lot of dynamics, a lot of structures, and there are people, these are more physicists. And the people and engineers are have a lot of empirical formulas to describe the average quantities, and these two camps are missing the bridge. So here is what we try to do.
I'm not so sure that the people that look at the structure are the physicists. I thought of them as being when I go to the DT meeting, we sort of meet our French, you know, people coming out of engineering doing.
Well, actually, these are the engineering people who are influenced by the physics spirit. So what I want to is to have a quantitative description of the MVB. So this is a mean velocity profile. So this is what Nigel wants to do also, because there's lots of information in it. Now, unfortunately, the theory for MVB either is incomplete. Incomplete, we have more theoretical argument about log law and power law. They are more theoretical, they're based on invariance principle. But they talk about MVP only through the some portion of it. Okay, log law will say that this portion, and power law will be go up a little bit, so a little bit more. And so that's focus on this range, and the other range. Okay, this is now Nigel. Their theory is about this mapping with this with the energy spectrum, and this will be the dissipation range, and this will be inertial range, and that will be the part which is non-universal actually. And that map is fine, but there is some little details with it. What I want to have is a theory which connect this with this and with this, and with a complete description of that. So, if I do anything here,
so this is a high flow channel flow.
Yeah, this is a generic thing, surface. Generic thing, pipe flow. Even could be boundary. Boundary will be different on this part.
Yeah. So the upper part doesn't really matter too much.
Well, it doesn't matter. It will be part of the story.
Okay.
Part of the story. It's important. I want to emphasize that we'll have to include everything.
Because the pipe has a certain symmetry which you don't have.
Exactly. The pipe has a symmetry and the channel has a symmetry, but boundary layer doesn't.
Yes.
And boundary layer also has an X dependence. And what is X dependence is? That's the whole story. What
is against X?
This is log Y now. Yeah, sorry. This is, oh, okay. The channel, this is a Y here.
Yeah.
And
the length scales of the three regimes are very different from each other. Right?
The length scale. Right. Yeah. This is a log Y, so that's why I put log away. And so this session is actually comparable with this one. And for the high Reynolds number, you go very high.
Yeah.
And to the right. Okay. So again, engineers are interested in knowing that, for example, if I have a roughness here, what's going on for the friction, and what I want to say that we're interested in what's going on for the whole thing, not just for the friction, And I have my interpretation of why or the success of their model is. Okay, so...
I have an experimental question, if I may, itself, before you get into the detail, maybe you can help on this now. So in our approach, the log region corresponds in some sense to the inertial range.
Right.
And so therefore, as you increase the Reynolds number, the extent of that log region
right.
scale in a way that's predicted by the theory.
Right.
And the same way that these range of the size of the inertial range
yep.
scales as you increase the Reynolds number.
Yeah.
So has there been experimental data on both the mean velocity profile and the energy spectrum, which shows that both of these things, that the size of those ranges are scaling correctly with Reynolds number as a way proportion to mean?
Well, I think this is an open question here, and this is a critical test of your mapping, and I don't think the answer is clear at this moment. But it's a very good question to ask. The key issue in Nigel, with Nigel, you haven't defined the issue.
What are others? I mean,
but there is an important issue here. Sorry.
Is it different?
Sorry. There is an important issue in
the. I want to see
but the right part isn't.
Okay, guys, center on me today. Okay, so the central issue, Nigel.
Nigel,
the central issue is that you haven't decided where do you measure the energy spectrum. You measure here or here or here. You haven't actually. So this is an open question. That's why it's open here. But I can go on in detail, talk about 2 hours about this issue. This is an important issue. Okay. All right. So the incompleteness and
Can you, when you say this is an important issue, so this question, let me summarize. So Nigel's question was whether the log region.
Yeah.
Right,
the log region is a global thing in the here,
right,
but the energy spectrum is a local thing.
The left turnover coming from the void going into the log region has been scaled with Reynolds number that works.
Yeah.
The right side depends on the particular flow you probe. One knows.
Yeah.
Well, there.
So the flow.
The way that the log region ends.
Why don't we state this question later? Because this is an interesting issue.
Down, so.
This is a energy spectrum. But I have to inject the point that energy spectrum depends on y. Where is the y you measure it? And the log region is the function of y. It's log y. It's a whole thing. It's here. They do not automatically match unless you make further assumptions. And so that's why there's an openness on that issue.
Right. I'm asking this
because we have been
talking about,
yeah.
for example, if you take a turbulent flow. No, let's assume you take a turbulent flow
yeah.
in a channel or in a pipe or in an open channel, which you generate the turbulence externally
yeah.
with a grid or something.
Yeah.
And you inject turbulence also into the flow.
Yeah.
So not all the turbulence comes from the boundary, but there's also large-scale decaying turbulence.
That's right.
How do they interact, and how do they cover down from the turbulence?
That's a very good question. I mean, okay, so what Nigel first asked is what happened for the smooth wall, and everything is generated at the wall, and how this correspondence goes. And this is there's a smooth wall question, and also there's rough wall question. Same thing, that I have roughness, and that reference inject its own stuff, and how this mix up. And then there are Eberhard's Bodenschatz, okay. Then has additional force, really additional force, by propellers and all this thing injection, and all by really Bernard by its own, by that the convection and all, these different forces all have injection energy spectrum. So that is exactly meaning that this is not a well-defined question yet. Even if you find the smooth wall with certain correspondence, there's still a lot of other open questions. Okay, so I do not dismiss the interest of that, but let's go on for sort of more overview of the scene. So what I want to say is that I want to develop, you know, a generalized similarity analysis to the scene. Similarity in the sense that suppose I have several layers or here, is there, and I ask the question, what happened for the where Reynolds number is high, get higher and higher. So that profile is going to change. Now, these days, by the way, this is sort of in the war units that everything seems to be collapsed here, and since here it gets changed. Is there a transformation that allow us to say that, okay, I can map this profile exact to that profile, exact to that profile as the Reynolds number goes up?
For the same type of flow.
So the Reynolds number similarity. But that similarity has to be involved in some portions that do not change and some portions change, and change in a way which according to the law. And actually, if we fabricate, if we sort of manufacture such a transformation, then there's something more in behind to tell us why it's so, and so what I call the generalized similarity analysis, try to go beyond. So let me just say that the generalized similarity already begin with my work with Levesque, that Kolmogorov have a complete set of similarity. So which means that there is a exact mapping from low Reynolds number to high Reynolds number. Everything just mapped out. Okay, RMS, you just turn RMS a little bit higher, and every other moment just go with it. The PDF do not change, and that's what the complete set of similarity is. Now I break this down. I say that if you consider extreme events, they do not scale in the same way as the RMS scale. So then we have to add something more to say that, okay, if I know they do not scale the same way, and what happens in between? Everything between extreme events and the RMS events, how they scale as we go. So I have to inject a new similarity, what I call the hierarchical similarity. That is the later to be proved that can be exactly realized by log Poisson cascade. But similarity, hierarchical similarity, is not equal to the log Poisson, in the sense that one is a more physical vision of the whole thing, another is mathematically with a multiplicative cascade, independent cascade, exactly realize that. This is two different things. One is more mathematical, another more physical. But it is for the first time to generalize a sort of hierarchical system, how that scales. But now, I want to point out from Pronto to Barenblatt, although the similarity changed a little bit, what Barenblatt called incomplete set of similarity, the similarity nature changes, but the layer, still one layer. It's changed the nature, is log here, and the other is more power law. But actually, Nigel rightly pointed out, actually, your work with Barenblatt is to show that actually one could be enveloped the other. There is an envelope connection with the two. And so if I take the power law, I put it on the exponent, something in the log. I'll get something similar to the log. Basically, that's But
the precise statement is that if the power law, it can't be a constant power law, but the only power law that satisfies the constant in Durbin bound is the power law going as 1 over log Reynolds number.
Right.
A function of y, a function of Reynolds number, is already an impartial. To your request for a flow that is both in y and Reynolds. That functional form has the remarkable form that if you look at its envelope is the law of the wall.
All right.
Found that, in fact.
Okay. So what it does is there is something like this, power law, and further another power law, further another power law, further another power law, all go on, and with this incomplete similarity is that is the power is the exponent, the change in Reynolds number, it has a different similarity, but it's still in it's a very smooth layer here. Now what I do want to do is more is that how that connect to the this run, and how that actually to the weak. All right, okay. Here, that this come to the story. That so what we do? So we do a prolonged Lie group analysis. What Prolongeon Lee group analysis does is that if I consider a physical quantity, phi, and usually people do the Lee group will see that, okay, phi is a function of y and t. Well, there's time there, and there's stretching of the y. We actually only on the dilation group. Dilation group is say that this y goes with lambda y. Now, of course, let's put the viscosity in. So that's the whole thing. That's the viscosity actually go down with some lambda or some alpha of y. So everything is stretched. So usually people examine how the phi goes with certain power, lambda of some power beta. And if you make beta to be log of the mu, beta could be actually log of mu. That's what Barenboim is good. You can access exponent, fabricate exponent, which itself depend on the other things. It's more convoluted things. But we decide that maybe not need to do that. Okay. Prolonged Lie group is not only you do phi, but also you do d phi, dy. You have to go to the gradient also, because for example, if phi is velocity, the velocity du is a shear. Shear is the most important thing, which can control the whole dynamics here. Okay, now if you do this in the Lie group, you generate I call x1 is the invariant for the phi, which I will not take the exponent, I'll just take abstractly the phi, x to be the invariant, Lie group invariant of this.
What is x? X is a function?
X is a Lie group invariant of...
It's a function of y and t, or y and mu, or it's a function of phi?
It's x...
Y and mu, probably.
It's not the y and mu, the phi, okay.
Why is a function of y and mu? Now, what is x?
X is a structure of the phi, which is invariant under this transformation. So it's a combination. Actually, the combination of the phi divided by this for example.
It's some combination of phi's.
Yes, it's a combination of phi with x and
this derivative.
It's like a function. So like a
similarity variable. So it's the scaling function. Look. So for example, they give an example that the friction coefficient. Okay, that is the Reynolds number of 1/4. So let's take that minus 1/4, right? Okay, and the function f of s of whatever Reynolds number of 3/4. That's what the Nigel's formula. Okay, so if you take f times of Reynolds number of 1/4, and so that is a if s scale in lambda and Reynolds number scale with some power of lambda and cf scale and this f is invariant, so that combination of the thing is what the x is. That is invariant. So for any a single power law, that you can always find the invariant of that.
It's the universal scaling function.
Right, inverse scaling function. So now, what the I can just go to the technical. That's what I want to do is to highlight this x1. Now you have corresponding thing for x2. Now people usually do not look at that, and when x1 is constant, the x2 follow immediately from x1. It's a trivial thing of x1, but we find that if you do a prolonged thing, that if we assume that x2 is not just proportional to x1 trivially, but x2 related to x1 plus some other constant of x1 power alpha here. That's the new ansatz.
Where does this come from? This is an assumption.
This is an assumption. It's an ansatz. It's a simple ansatz. And if you do this, you would allow the phi to have two states.
It restricts the family of possible phis.
Right. It's give another family of phis and actually give some function of n of alpha over n, some kind of generic function of interpolation with this
So what is the what is X2?
Where does this consensus come from?
What is X2 going to represent?
Dy.
How dy by dy is transformed, is that right?
Right. It tells us that if phi transform in this one, but phi d phi dy do not exactly transform follow exactly and has some additional contribution from here, and that introduced a modification of the scaling for look at this one.
Of course, is the system still to become?
Yeah, this is a let's take y over y zero here, of you have the scaling flat scaling of phi zero initially, and then later. For y bigger than y zero bigger than one, it just go to a new scaling of y over y zero of alpha.
Is this a simple pedagogical example? Where you have a phi scaling in a particular way, and then do phi by dy scaling as if it's a sort of independent, completely independent scaling. Like
there are many examples of this. One is Bachelor interpolation, for example.
What is
Bachelor interpolation? For the structure function, second order structure function, which in the inertial range is the 2/3 power, and to the dissipation range it goes to power one, power two, sorry. Right, you can have 2/3 go to power two, and you redefine the variable, you will see that okay, at this function, this is exactly in that form, that's the interpolation formula.
Right.
And so what I'm saying here is that, okay, the empirical formula give you sort of inertial range and dissipation range all in one basket.
So instead of that, this would be just a crossover scaling.
Yeah. Right. It's a mixed scaling formula. It's one region in some behavior in the other region, and what I'm saying here is that it shows it's just a way to redescribe it. Redescribe it in the Poulenc Lie group is that if the invariance, the two invariants have a certain relationship, and this relationship actually this answer describes a smooth transition from one to the other. So that if we do the Lie group, this is the x1, this is the x2, this Lie group phase plane, and x1 usually that it's a straight line. When x1, x2 are in trivial relation in the same uniform state. But now with this one, it just bends a little bit. So the curve become a new. So with the straight line, that usually what people, we don't have to look at this plane at all. We just look at the in cross section, and this one point is our solution, is our scaling solution. But now, because of the mixed state, actually the curve deform in some particular way, and that is we're still. I'm saying this the theory is in construction now. We're still trying to think whether this curve is a kind of there's RG interpretation of this. So this is what the theory is still will go. But at this moment, let me tell you the fact that if I do this, I will have a systematic formula which try to describe a certain dependence of the phi on the y, which is the profile I want to study. And now let me apply this into some quantities in the wall boundary turbulence.
Let me jump. So what is your final goal? Is to describe a smooth function which would go from one scaling into another scaling?
Which under the Reynolds-Hilbert transformation, I know exactly what does. Because the Lie group will say that I know the transformation rule. And if I specify this relation, it tells me that how, whenever Reynolds-Hilbert can change a factor of lambda, what the profile is going to do.
relation you postulate.
Right.
So it could be different relation.
Could be different relation, yes, absolutely.
On the sense you postulate it, but you don't know the exponent.
Exponent is parameter now, it's not known.
You find it, or you will mention it, or you get it from the data?
Well, first we'll get from the data, and then we'll interpret it, and then we'll try to derive it.
Let me see if I've understood it. If I may interrupt and just might say what I think you said. So usually if you have just this x1,
yeah,
that already gives you the cross-satisfactory description of the crossover between two regimes.
Yeah.
So for example, like you pointed to my friction factor formula, so that gives you a crossover between the Blasius regime and the Spickler regime.
Right.
And now you want to say, I want to incorporate more than two regimes in the analysis because I've got these different layers.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is I want the scaling function itself to change as I go further out of the regime. So what you've done is you've made another scaling variable. So if I look at the form x2 is x1 plus c and x1 is the alpha,
mm-hmm.
depending on the sign of alpha, as the scaling function itself, x1, gets large, then x2 goes from a regime where it's just proportional to x1 to a regime where it goes at a power of that. And so that's how you're getting the different
There is a
well. There's two possible regimes, but
yeah. If your description is on the velocity profile, it's correct, mm-hmm. but on the friction, it's not. Why so? That I'll tell you later. Because
the friction is
the integral stuff, and it's not the primary quantity to work on.
That's fine, but I don't understand the principle.
Yeah.
So you're just trying to say.
Let's stick on this object here. Yeah.
So that's a high school algebra, that would be groups and anything like that. You're just trying to find a way that I can describe a function.
To this one, to this function.
Different transitions of scaling.
Yes. Okay. So let's stick on this object because this has a more direct relation with Navier-Stokes, and this is the point I try to make right now. So much about the Lie group now. It's just a sort of convenient language to talk about the change of the scalings. But now let's say Navier-Stokes. Okay, first point I'd like to make is that when we do this, because the Lie group is invented to do the differential equation. So we stick as close as we can to the equation. So the equation for the channel flow describes this is W plus S equal to tau, actually. W is the minus Reynolds stress. So I'll put everything in plus, which is normalized with the wall units. And tau is equal to one minus Y, and the one minus Y plus over Reynolds number. Okay, Reynolds number tau, actually. So difference between Reynolds number and RE and RE tau. And S is the DU plus DY plus, which is the R shear. And actually, the viscosity disappeared. Actually, this term is really the viscous shear stress, and this is Reynolds shear stress, and sum of the total shear stress, which in the channel and the pipe is exactly linearly proportional to the distance from the wall. All right. By the way, this is also equal to Z, which I later will use, is the distance from the center. Actually, distance from center is a much better variable, actually. You have a point?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, so now I want to first, I think it's important to say that, okay, what I'm going to apply this idea to which quantity on this? Whenever people do the, so this is how the order function.
You treat this as an equation on what?
This is the equation for the pipe or for the channel. That's the momentum equation.
This equation contains a mean profile and it contains
all the informations. Actually, everything has to be there, but there have to be this is a fluctuation, and that is the mean here, and they coupled and just stay along.
You assume that W is also a function of coordinate.
W is a function of x, is the y is a function of y and viscosity. Yeah. So basically, I want to see that in the y and viscosity, is there sort of combined transformation actually could make this equation to be invariant for all Reynolds number? For all Reynolds number.
It has two functions.
Yeah, has two. Exactly. So what order function is that is a function that phi, which this is a little philosophical thing, is that it's played the role of order parameter in our statistical physics field, and so it summarized the effect of the fluctuations on the mean. In other words, if I know the order parameter, I would know what the macroscopic field is. So here is a similar thing that I will try to invent this concept of order function, say that, okay, I choose, give an example, mixing lens. Mixing lens is introduced by S plus equal to the W, this is one I need to model, and people take additive viscosity times this. And then to say that additive viscosity is the LM square times S itself, so put this square. So this is for the additive viscosity times this one. And so finally, we have this formula here. Now, Pronto, von Karman, just take LM equal to kappa y and to generate log law, and which enormously is successful because and the engineers like that and use all the time, so using the kappa. And with CFD, that the only kappa matters. You really take the kappa and they fix their CFD model. There are a lot of other parameters, but their parameters are fixed such that the kappa is given by 0.41 or something. They love it. But
and it works.
It works. It really works. But now we don't know why. But the thing is that it really begins from here. So what I'm saying that in order to have the fourth profile, that LM should allow a very smooth function from here, kappa y, back to here, and go to there. You have to have a tall profile. So that's what I'm working on, that let's take phi equal to LM. Let's apply that our sort of prolonged Lie group on the LM to see what can we say about this. Let LM
length is a functional parameter.
A parameter, and to see how that generates.
It's really any viscosity can be
computed from there.
It's really mixing lens.
It's a really mixing lens, and we know that mixing lens at small y, when y goes to zero, mixing lens. Okay, by the way, mixing lens, you invert it, that is this. All right? And when goes to zero, S goes to one, this one, we discover numerically, that near the wall, this is the y plus three. The three is come from the symmetry. The u prime goes linearly with y, and v prime, because of symmetry, goes with y prime square, so it's y prime cube. And this coefficient actually is 0.001 numerically. That's.
But those of us who, I mean, there might be some people. Why don't you define U and V?
U and V.
Plot on your coordinate system U and V, and there on the left side. It's trivial, but just.
This is the U.
No, on the bottom there where you have a coordinate system. Which one is down? Which is three?
Oh, right. This is the log Y.
What is it? U and V there, U prime, V prime, right?
So U prime, V prime.
It's streamwise and the other one is perpendicular. Right,
this is a U, capital U, mean velocity, and also it's U prime.
Exactly.
And there, this is V prime, yeah.
That was complete.
Yeah. Imagine this is a photograph. All right, right. Okay, so this one goes with y plus of 3/2. So somewhere you have a y plus of 3/2 get a transition to y plus, kappa y plus. Now, how many transitions there are? Just one transition from here to here, or there is something intermediate? And a priori, we don't know. So this is have to go with the empirical data. So we look at the DNS data. We find that near the wall is this behavior, and a little bit towards the center, there's a transition happened, and it goes to y plus of square. And then go to a transition to y plus. So there are one transition, two transition up to here. And then to the outer layer. Outer layer. Outer layer, we have to use the variable z. That's the coordinate, that's the natural coordinate, not to the y. Because the outer layer is what generated by symmetries, and it really matters. All right, so here is the model. Actually, let me just write.
When you're saying you go from y to the 3 host,
from
y squared to y.
To the y, what, linear to y.
To y.
And then to the outer
z. You assume that there's power loss, but in reality, these are just local fits, right? I mean, this is not really
power loss. Actually, it is. You can perform.
There's decades of.
No. It's not decades, but it's but there is a local scaling here. There is something slope. You can do. You can do with d log lm.
That's just a local slope.
Yeah. D log y. Hold on. Let me just do that. Like, if you do this, you see the plateau here at the 3/2. And then you go down, and there is a little plateau here. It's a really, that's exactly, so that's a surprise.
Yeah, I can see the data.
Yeah, that's this will be the JFM, this we're submitting this, and I'll show you, that's why I bring my computer out. And this goes up. Yeah, so this is 2, and then come down to 1. You can do this. You can do this empirical data, and there is a little plateau here. This is, and it's sitting too.
This is not DNS. This is DNS.
This is DNS data, right? You got this point.
How do these ranges depend on Reynolds number?
They actually do not depend on Reynolds number. It's for very small Reynolds number. Actually, it's quickly settled down to this, and
it just extends.
It just extends out there, and here doesn't change at all. So, but. Here it is. That's an interesting question. I mean, because usually when we speak of power law, we always talk about the infinite stretching ratios. Here it's a local stretching ratio and local invariance. Everything is just finite, and so. But still, we're talking about a map actually. So that's what I try to say. That transformation here is a map, and the map could actually locally have some. Sort of nice behavior, like with the exponent like this.
So all this is for a smooth wall, right?
Yes, that's for smooth wall.
So when people make walls
rough wall, we were working on
it. The length scales in your plot,
right.
Typically roughness would set in.
Right, right.
Where would you be in the squared region?
Well, now we'll do a story now on rough wall is actually is a Nigel's test to me, is that I don't know anything about the rough wall, but I fabricate one, and actually how this layer changes. Here is the just gave some. Okay, just write this down. Okay, there's one. Okay. This is the inner layer structure of the 3 factors.
And
these are the parameters. Y C Y M is the transition location here. And I'll tell you what is it. And outer structure is extremely simple. That's the weak structure. Let me first tell you what this is. This corresponds to the transition to the for the channel and the pipe at the center, that the du dy is exactly equal to 0. So du dy equal to 0, s equal to 0, so there is no production at all. So all the energy source, but they're finite dissipation. So energy source coming from the advection. So there's a change, switch, of the energy source mechanism from the shear production into the advection. And that take place at ZC, and ZC is zero.
This is where you approach this closed layer?
No, this is the center. This is the center, near the center. Yeah. I'm talking about the center.
Shear is turbulent.
Yeah.
Actually, so a quarter to the center is where actually homogeneity actually could be there. But okay, so to Z, big than ZC, in other words, get away, here is the center line, and one quarter out of here, that's ZC. So this is a convection production. Here the shear become important.
So the homogeneous is not produced in the center, but
it's produced here and migrate there by the vection.
The middle is actually decaying.
Everything is maintained.
What puzzles me here is the transfer of energy is what you call W times D over dy of mean profile.
Right. Okay. This is production.
The derivative of mean profile goes to zero as I approach the center.
That's right.
Okay. Which means the transfer of energy approaching zero as I
exactly
approach this center.
Exactly.
So now, which means that nothing brings turbulence to the center.
Wait. Here is the point that this is the physics, but that physics is in this equation here. The equation is Navier-Stokes. It's not. But when people assume this, everybody assume this, okay, this breakdown, I did not assume anything.
Okay.
I did not take the energy equation. Right. Energy equation affects this in here. That's what I'm keep saying, that I have to do the LM to the full solution. And I did not say that this is not the only order parameter I take. The second order parameter is exactly this one, theta mu equal to epsilon over SW. I do this structure thing together with this second order parameter, which has the all energy dynamics in it. So I can actually go on to the high orders to include more order parameters, which will generate more layers, has to do with more subtleties. But
so you have another functional form. Yeah. Essentially deduced from the DNS data for things.
That's right. That's right. At the first step.
What does that look like? Does that have additional fitting parameters? Like
which one? This one?
So you've got YM and YL and ZC. So those are parameters that you can deduce from the DNS.
This has the same parameter here.
Same parameter.
I'll show you later on this one, but there is one more layer for this one. There's one more layer here at 1 plus y over 2, and there's one more layer here, and that corresponds to the transition between so below 2 is really the viscous one, but in the real viscous one close to the wall, the energy supply is not from the shear either. Is from the pressure. The pressure one provide the energy very near the wall. And so there's a transition on here, and then this transition, there is another land scale. So there is quite a few land scales. Let me just give you the land scales. There's one land scale called eddy dissipating land scale. It's by S3W3 over over epsilon.
Over
W three over S3 epsilon 1/4, and that is to take the mu t of cube over epsilon. Like this eddy viscosity we're just talking about, you use this eddy viscosity to generate a similar sort of Kolmogorov dissipation land scale, and that 1/4, and this one we discover actually 1 - z^4 is we discover from this land scale. Mm-hmm. This land scale does not have this structure. Mm-hmm. It only has to do with the cascade. And the cascade, it has the 1 - z^4 structure all the way down to the center. And there is an exact relation between these three quantities is Lm equal to L nu times the theta mu of power 1/4. So actually the fluctuation dynamics is controlled by L mu and theta mu. and together give you the mixing lens. Now I'm just giving you, but the theory can actually work for all of those and to get one lens scale. And there's a lot of work to be done to understand why this parameter is. So let me give you.
Can I ask something? So why did you take y over y l to the fourth? Because the formula, the one up, the formula one in this big formula, one plus y over y l to the fourth. Why did you take a four there? Because you could just take one, and then the outer power would be one half.
Absolutely, that's a very good question. If you do the dimensional analysis using the W, using S, using epsilon, three quantities to compose a lens scale, there's infinite number of where there's no, one parameter also, family.
I think you misunderstand. He was asking about the LN formula. This one, ideas of power of four.
This one. Okay, right. This is another parameter of the Lie group there, which say that I have a transition from here to here, and how sharp the transition is. It's a sharpness, transition sharpness. And this is a parameter which don't matter very much to the physically, but actually it has to do with the equation that sometimes the transition is 4, sometimes transition is 6 and 8, or but they cancel this.
But it's a choice.
Well, it's a choice.
It's
a parameter.
It's just an output from the direct amount of simulation, right?
Of course it is.
Transition, and then you measure what that crossover that looks like, and that's the number that goes into this formula.
That's correct. But that says that what I did not invent much. I just invent a method to describe the data. All right.
I'm just trying to strip this down so it's bare essential. So the formula is a very helpful formula. It shows you explicitly the different possible
layers. Different possible layers, yes.
Yeah. And the form of the transitions is
right.
Is a matter of solving.
But if you. Yeah.
There's no way you can calculate those from first principles, and they're not random.
Not yet.
You're saying this is either 2, 4, or 6. There's not 2.345. I mean, there's no fraction.
Hold on. I think you're talking about different things.
Yes, all they have to do is as you go from one limit to the other, the power laws have to cancel out. So you go to the next.
Well, that's how you do it.
Well, this is a fitting. This is a 4, 4, 4, 6. That's a very, it's a fitting parameter. But the 1/8/4, that's 1/2. The 1/2 power is what I needed to make a transition to here. And there's minus 1 power also make a transition to there. And this is kind of also measured, of course. Also measured, because this analysis. But it's fitting under some framework.
So it's important what you pick, but if you pick it too small, you won't have the different plateaus in your exponent.
Wait, Gunther. This theory will suggest you to do this plot.
Yeah.
And after you do this plot, sitting here, we have no choice. They sit there. If it turns out it's not two, suppose the data tell me that it's not two, it's 5/3, 2/5. Then I have to change here 2/5.
Yeah, that's what you
said. Yeah, but a priori I don't know what is, and if you do this plot, you don't have any choice. The data tells you what it's supposed to be. So the best I describe in some way is that I invent a Fourier transform. If you have a data, you want to know what the oscillation frequency is. You do the Fourier transform, you find a peak. So that method is allow you to extract the information out of this thing. But suppose you do the plot, and it give you this. All right. Or it give you this. That means the whole theory doesn't work, right? But I probably don't have any control on this. I'll ask you to do the plot, and we can do it. So it's a method. It's a method, and it.
In stat net language, it's really saying if you have scaling machines, what you want to do is you want to look at what people call the beta function, which tells you the logarithmic change in scale of the coupling constants are there. And that's exactly what you did. But we know this is a parallel type of theory.
Okay.
And so that's what you're doing. It's the same thing people do to look to do compensate plots to try to pick out the expenses. It's absolutely correct.
This is a little bit a more framed way to train to look at the data.
All of these generalized parallel scalings are, you can think of them as outcomes of different people. That's what keep you correct.
Right.
So what you also saying, which you haven't said yet, which you told me in China, was that there's a whole zoo of equations like this where people have tried to, in engineering, to describe this.
That's exactly, that's right.
Which have been published, and this is not one that's, it's at least a rigorous, kind of rigorous approach.
This is a sort of analysis that, why we do Fourier transform? Because we know, we kind of understand there's some frequency oscillation there. There's a couple of frequency oscillation. If I do the Fourier transform, I pick up those, and everything now makes sense. I could determine the frequency by that. This again, that if the underlying thing has certain invariant structure of scaling transition to scaling, and then it will come out. Pick that one.
I was just trying to point out there's many of these.
And the difference is that, so you have parallels, so say, as you say, if you have a frequency, you want to pick that up by looking at a pupil and Fourier transform.
Yeah.
If you have a parallel, you want to look at it as a plateau and a logarithmic derivative.
Right,
and,
right.
What I do is that you take in the DNS and then you don't fit it ad hoc, but you fit it by asking for what should be the effective parallels of the different scales.
What turns out is that the function we say here is a function which actually goes smoothly from here to there, so sort of to follow that curve, and that's how this transition takes place. And the n, you ask the n depends on how, you know, this could be very sharp, you know, or could be very smooth. So that's what the n matters.
And you were saying that these other formulas that existed before this one, that engineers have been using very much more ad hoc.
That's right. Including bachelor interpolation formula, including many, many other interpolation formulas.
It just fits
data, and now we see a little bit sort of analytic structure behind it. Okay. So now, having said that, So we discovered this transition here. Well, not discover. I mean, actually, it is not. Well, when we say it, it's not so astonished. But we add this factor in. For example, in the Lvov, Prokatchia, Rodenko, in their theory, that they assume this. All right. So they don't have this structure here.
So will you show us the graph of d log l by d log y? Do you have the data to show us?
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to see the.
I'll show you this in a minute. Okay. All right. So there is this factor here. Also, the combination. So in the Lvov, their structure, there is a transition from here immediately to something artificial here, and actually we sort of corrected this thing in the middle of stuff. That's pretty much okay. This function is quite close to their empirical function they pick up. So this is the middle in log. This will go to log log. Actually, you know, one minus z actually is y. Is y. So that cancels out, and this goes to the y. All right. So
how do you measure the mixing in the DNS?
Oh, just that. That's the mixing length, that the LM equal to the W over S. Just simply measure that, and this is so simple. Yeah, and so people should just do it systematically, and by the way, we actually invented two other order functions. One order function is that just the ratio of the terms, and just the ratio of the terms. And for example, this two terms are the two terms in energy equation, and the ratio of them give us a very good sign of how one mechanism is compensated by another mechanism. For example, if this number is much below than below one, that means there is some other mechanism for the dissipation happen, all right? And so this is an order function. And the third order function will be the one which sensitively pick up the thing. For example, this equation on both sides is equal to one near the wall. So if we subtract the wall from both sides, which would be, it's one minus tau equal to one minus S and minus W. And we call this to be the sort of defect stress. And you compute this quantity, and you, W over SD is sigma, is a very important order parameter, which you pick out the wall structures, the near the wall. And if you plot this, and also near the center, and if plot this, you will see that how DNS has converged. Because this number must go to the asymptotic state as supposed to be, and some of the DNS very large resolution do not have this property, and that's so we call this a sensitive indicator of the. This is also order function, so you can theoretically tell us what the power law should be in near the wall. So that's why DNS was good or not. It's very so three type of order functions now. Okay, now what I want to say is that
okay, got another hour or two at least. 2 minutes.
Thanks, guys. So what we have accomplished is that this formula. Seem to work for the pipe data of Moyen simulation in the same way as it works for the Princeton data. So it's a low Reynolds number simulation and a huge Reynolds number experiments. It's all in the same. And in the process, we discover that there's a channel flow Reynolds number and a pipe flow Reynolds number. There's a square root of two factor.
So what you say is that the Princeton data you can do the same. Locus.
Yes, except that the Reynolds number have to be changed by a factor of two because of geometry.
Do they see this nice square
law? Yeah.
Yeah. The Princeton data has that.
Oh, Princeton data doesn't because they don't have this data at all. What they have is so I just one line more that you know what I mean. So when you put this LM. Back into here, you have the LM square S square plus S equal to one minus Y. You can solve S from the LM, just quadratic equation. And then you can integrate it, you got U. So all the profile comes out just algebraically.
Okay, so
what I mean is the LM satisfies this relation and they produce the U exactly fit. Now, which is not the fact. I don't know what the Itama has done. In their PIL paper 2008, they pretend to be able to fit the Princeton data. But there is a if you take their formula and plot against the Smith's data, no, they fell apart. But if you make a change of the square root of two, it does. But there's nowhere it mentioned that in their paper. But there is a factor of square root of two in the Reynolds number in the pipe and the Reynolds number in the channel. Now, so with this factor of two, we have the same formula work for the channel flow simulation at low Reynolds number. Channel flow is Re tau, goes from 300. Now the largest is 2000. But Re would be a little higher. Now, I was trying to make a comment when Nigel makes the seminar, say that we have a friction coefficient, square root of F equal to log of the RE, and then square root of F again here. You're saying that it's a complicated formula. Well, if you take this RE tau, this RE tau is just like that. It's not complicated. There's a relation between RE tau and RE itself. There is a flat factor. So suppose I do the description here in terms of RE tau, then the friction coefficient is not complicated at all. It's just a simple matter. There's a plus V. And so the square F is this square minus 1. That's the F. Now that fits the data of CF beautifully. I mean, it's because the whole profile is get very well produced. Let me show you some so to where is the
Cradle-Mont common looks complicated because it's implicit for the friction factor.
那个是在哪一个？哪一个？
Explicit.
That's, yeah.
Especially, it's more calming in that way.
It is living.
So it depends on how you want to look at causal effect.
Is the Reynolds number causing the friction factor? As long as you put a graph, just look at it like this.
Yeah. X-triggers the square.
Well, okay, sorry. What? Okay. All right, there's a JFM paper, it's written now. It's, all right, so. I'll be submitted, it's just a. You have to wear a war? No. That's the usual. This is the usual budget. I just try to. Okay. This is one of the older functions that shows the transition. Sigma. This is sigma for the two layers, and the transition point is 10, and this 10 we can predict is 10 from the war constant. And just alpha, this alpha b is 1,000 take 1/3 power -1 is 10. So there is some connection there, but we haven't explained why are this Reynolds stress near the wall. But this is what the Grisha, I agree with you that we should do some asymptotics. But this is something very near the wall. The Reynolds stresses increase with some alpha b, some power y plus of a cube of there is coefficient here. We should be able to derive some asymptotic argument to see to evaluate this coefficient. And once we got that, we know y plus equal to 10, y plus equal to 10. And then we have a kappa. By the way, I should write this to you, that the kappa, the common constant, is yw of y seed. This is 3/2, this is 1/2, and this is ym. The three layers make the common constant. And this is is 10, and this is 10, and this is 42. 42 is the layer of the where log log begins, and that's give you 0.42 or 41. All right? Huh?
42 is the answer to the universe. Remember that movie, the book.
Really? Okay.
And the answer to the universe is what number? It was 42.
Okay. This is. So LM. This LM is just do the commutator plot. Commutator plot over 1 - z^4. So this is the layer 1 - z. The bulk flow has 1 - z^4 structure. That's first time for discovery. And there's one here, and this one is if I do the d log of this one, you'll see this plateau here. Mm-hmm. And there is a plateau.
You have the d log.
Yeah.
But it's a line. But hold on. Oh, the line is your model.
That line is the model. Yeah. It just go just with this function that I.
You pick that four.
To make a transition.
To get this fit.
This is a scaling,
and so
right that is yes, and also there is a curve here also is a 4.
If you pick 2 or 6, it wouldn't
will
work.
Will be a little bit off. Yeah. But actually, if you evaluate the quantity like CF, it doesn't matter at all. You don't show there. So I have the D-log. This is for the theta mu. The another one, theta mu, that the ratio of the dissipation production over dissipation. So you see the production here is very small. And only the quasi-equilibrium range is here. That is 1. And then it dropped down with z to the power 2 at the center because the production does not matter at all. It's the advection which matters. So you have this 2 range here to get a complete picture out of that.
So if the measure of the goodness of a theory is finding power laws, you win.
Okay, where I have a D-log of plot. Here. That was hardly see a plateau, I'm sorry. but it's 1.
It's in the unit, at least it's in the unit.
It is 1. It is 1. It's not 1.0. Okay, so it's a good number to do the theory.
At least
it's not go. It's as good as subscaling laws or turbulence.
But definitely it's not something which is stretched out, which does not stretch. It just find the mapping. Here. Sorry, this is the plot for LM, direct LM. This one for the. So there's 2, and there's 1, and there's another plateau.
The evidence for the 3/5 one.
Yeah.
Marginal.
Well, okay. But let me show you some. There are some other plateaus here. One to blow up a little bit.
Different
range. Yeah. Okay. So, towards the end, what's the predict? How the prediction matches? Okay. This is, you see, if you do the sensitive indicator, and that's what the Jimenez simulation is. So near the center has not converged yet. I mean, it's very hard to converge because W is zero mean, and so it has fluctuations. Zero, so you have to wait a long time.
Yeah.
But whenever they do the big simulation 2000, they want to publish soon. So they can't wait that long, or they cannot afford to the computer time to make it converge. So it's very reasonable.
The other ones, they're from you?
These are the Japanese simulation 300. And
the other ones, you mean as a simulation?
It's at a lower Reynolds number, and so it's converged quickly, more satisfactory. Okay, and so there are unanswered questions about the central structure. What this theory predict is the Reynolds stress. You know, Reynolds stress has a peak.
How do you say it's predicting something? I don't understand. There's a huge amount of impotence in terms. What sense is a prediction?
Well, why don't we leave this philosophical discussion for later? Different people have different. Look at the dictionary that people
describes.
Will interpret differently.
Let's say describes.
Well, there is a one prediction though.
That's a self-consistencies that you can check.
There is a prediction of the peak of the Reynolds stress. At low Reynolds number, goes with Reynolds number of 1/3 power. And at high Reynolds number, is 1/2 power.
Yeah.
I think that deserves a word, this prediction. Never people have mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. All right? So we take some information. Look. A simulation only gives you some number at fixed Reynolds number, correct?
Right.
It does not give you the Reynolds number dependence, right? And when you have these few dots, you can't say anything, whether it's 1 power, 1/3, or 2/3. What we predict is that low Reynolds number here is 1/3 power, and here is 1/2 power. And that was
that's a prediction.
But Srinivasan has collected data and shows it's more or less 1/2 power. But when you go down to the low Reynolds number simulation, never works. Now we fit all the low Reynolds numbers.
That's a prediction.
All right? Okay. So this is one thing. And this is the prediction of prediction, this is description then. It's the S near the center, and this is Boccaccia, this their curve, a little bit off because that we have not this another mechanism of advection. We had it, so we follow the data pretty closely. And so, and also we the gamma function is the y times du dy, which this log law here, the plateau will be the log law, and the peak here, ours actually work better than theirs in catch the peak. Well, this is again that we take a lot of more information from DNS than they do, so that's good for now. So the, everything. So this is our prediction of the not the description of the mineralization profile, and this is the renal stress is also good, and this is the kinetic energy. We have also description of the kinetic energy that so basically I do the same thing for the mean momentum equation and or for the energy equation. So they have the same structure and same set of parameters, not different set of parameters, and a catch up. Now, so we think that the DNS data of Jimenez 2000 has not fully converged yet. That's what we think. There's a little discrepancy here, and this to be checked in the future. Okay, I think. One more thing to say is that now with this we know if I have a blue and a suck near the wall, I vary the YC and YM. We can construct a sort of more rational model for that and to see how much drag reduction can yield. And we predict, this is what I think is again called prediction, is that some of the manipulation thing, their drag reduction effects is going to disappear at high Reynolds number. They present a sort of 60% or 50% reduction at certain low Reynolds number. And we know, we think that their Reynolds number is too low because the disturbance on YC, YM is too huge. But then, as Reynolds number goes up, what they generate is a bulk flow perturbation. The bulk flow perturbation, their influence on YC and YM is going to diminish as Reynolds number goes up. The YC, YM become thinner and thinner, so there are effects of the drag reduction is going to disappear. So we could actually talk about the sort of 10%, 20% of drag reduction effects with resulting from the variation of the parameter here, comma. Well, many other things I want to say, I want to sort of say that the general structure of this multilayer, this is what I advertised here, itself is kind of robust. If we have more effects like rotation or buoyancy or others, so that's, it will have to go from one state to another state, but just the nature of the state will be different case by case. But that apparatus here sort of a way, at least take away as a way to analyze experimental data or the DNS data is a good procedure to catch the information and to look at the parameter variation, for example, Rossby number or the Prandtl number we do the analyzer data and to see how the underlying structure could be sort of qualitatively to.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess I won't take you too long.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, this is the behavior of the thing in the high Reynolds number. You see that there is a log.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.